Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. by your remedies in the law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at your remedies in the law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with your remedies in the law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of your remedies in the law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. So essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you'll get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can disclose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, thank you so very, very much, Martin. I appreciate your time and disclaimer there. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to be talking about, and John will be going into depth, on the subject of probable cause. Let's add reasonable suspicion also, since they too seem to get conflicted. And then what is the Terry stop? So let me start real quickly by just giving you a succinct definition, if you would, of these three items. And then John is going to go into great depth on its application as it applies to you on the side of the road, I would imagine. All right, so probable cause means that a reasonable person would believe that a crime was in process or being committed, had been committed, or was about to be committed. Incidentally, about to be committed is kind of like the thought police. Probable cause is enough for a search warrant or an arrest warrant. It's also enough for a police officer to make an arrest if he sees a crime being committed, Reasonable suspicion has been defined by the United States Supreme Court as, quote, the sort of common sense conclusion about human behavior upon which practical people are entitled to rely upon. Further, it is defined reasonable suspicion as requiring only something more than an inarticulable hunch. It's got to be more. It requires facts, circumstances that give rise to more than a bare, imaginary, or purely conjectural suspicion. Reasonable suspicion means that any reasonable person would suspect that a crime, was in the process of being committed, having been committed, or was about to be committed very soon. If a police officer has a reasonable suspicion in a situation, he may frisk or detain the suspect briefly. Reasonable suspicion does not follow for the searching of a person or vehicle unless the person happens to be on school property. Reasonable suspicion is not enough for an arrest warrant or a search warrant. Terry, the Terry stop, also known as an investigative detention or a stop and frisk, is the authority to conduct an investigative detention and frisk of a crime suspect. It is arguably the most significant piece of case law evolution supporting officer safety and proactive patrol and investigation in this 20th century. When properly applied, it permits law enforcement officers and agents to interdict a crime before it occurs. Hello, thought police. And allows them to protect themselves from a potentially deadly assault in the process. While this body of law traces its roots to 1968, a Supreme Court case of Terry versus Ohio, there have been several noteworthy developments in this body of law over the last 40 years, several of the alone in the year 2000. So, the purpose of the Terry stop is to conduct a brief investigation to confirm or deny that probable cause is not developed to the suspect. Excuse me, let me try this one again. I messed it up. So the Terry stop is to conduct a brief investigation to confirm or to deny the suspect is involved in a criminal activity. Crime. A law enforcement officer may initiate a Terry stop when he or she suspects that an individual is committing, has committed, or is about to commit a crime. I'm being theatrical for a reason. John's going to explain. But probable cause does not exist yet to arrest, and the officer wants to stop the suspect and investigate. If during the stop probable cause to arrest is developed, the suspect may and well be arrested. It's called a fishing expedition. If probable cause is not developed, the suspect is released. Lawful Terry stops can also be used to develop important criminal intelligence. If officers are documenting their Terry stops, the file of persons stopped, their descriptions, their names, their addresses, the locations, the frequencies of their interdiction, this all can be compiled. For many years, the New York City Police Department would refer to precinct-level stop and frisk cards completed by an officer during Terry stops when they were looking for leads on an unsolved crime, major crimes in the area. Often a victim's general description of an assailant would match that of a suspect stopped three or four times in the past and in the same general area by precinct cops for suspicion of pre-robbery activities. Hello, Thought Police. Anybody here? Thought Police? In many cases, these documented Terry stops lead to photo lineups, fingerprint runs, voluntary contacts, a submission to police questioning, so forth. And this eventually solves some open crimes. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John and let him share with you the truth. Let's go to church.
Good evening, Michael, and all our honored constituents and listeners this evening. Thank you for that kind and gracious introduction. Term probable cause is used in the Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, and it states, and it's there for a very, very specific reason. And we're going to the Fourth Amendment, I'm going to read it just outright. The right to the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by a oath of affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Going back, not to be theatrical, it says, no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. The Constitution was very clear. A warrant has to be issued. If they've got probable cause, that means that they know what they're doing, and they already know they have the evidence, and they know where they have a very good idea where it's hiding and what they need to do to get it. That means that all they have to do is just stop and hold you until they can get a warrant. And a warrant is a function now, in most cases, of simply they can use the PDT, the portable data terminal, in their patrol car to type up a probable cause affidavit or statement, and most jurisdictions even have form letter affidavits for them to the officer to sign, and they just need to wait till the judge approves it to search your vehicle. They can impound your vehicle without searching it. And certain jurisdictions, including Arizona, they say, well, they have an inventory search. And they, because they've been accused of stealing out of vehicles before, so we have the right to inventory. No, you don't. They absolutely do not have the right to inventory. That's a policy. That's a deprivation of your rights under color of their policy. And the Terry stop, if we have an individual, like in this case where both the individuals in the Terry stop there had had a six-shot revolver and extra ammunition there. But when they picked up Richard Chilton and Terry, both their weapons were concealed, and the officer, in this case, Officer McFadden, went and spun Terry around, felt the gun, and said, you know, and that was his quote-unquote probable cause. Well, a person, you know, the basis for his probable cause was unconstitutional and therefore illegal. So Officer McFadden committed a second-degree federal felony, and the basis of the Terry versus Ohio decision, 392 U.S. 1, 1968, was based on a falsehood that it was unlawful to carry the gun, the revolver at the time. And both Terry and the other, and Chilton, both had a six-shot revolver and all the ammunition to go with it. And after the fact, this is when Officer McFadden and his watch commander, David Wilson, used to justify the stop. And in this case, it wasn't a stop. They were pedestrians at the time in front of a department store. And at this juncture, they used a false pretense, i.e., the fact that to keep and bear a firearm, in this case, they were contending that it was illegal. So that's a second-degree federal felony automatically on the officers. But when you get, if you get stopped for any reason at all, and they ask you to step out of the car, lock your car. You know, when I pull over, I always roll down the window, put my keys in the dash, I shut the engine off, and making sure my wallet's unfolded and my ID's out on the dash by the time the officer gets there. And I always turn the lights in the inside of the car on, especially if it's at night. And if I'm the only person in the car, when I get out, as I'm unbuckling, I never unbuckle myself before I get out. But as I'm unbuckling, I roll up the windows and press the lock button and close the doors. You know, I do leave the keys inside. Now, some of our vehicles have those little cutesy number pads on them, so we can reopen them quite easily. One or two of them don't. But that prevents them from doing an illegal search. Not that I've ever had a reason to prevent the search, but I do preclude that. Twice they stopped, they have committed a search on my vehicle and illegally seized things. But before they started the search, I says, what is your probable cause? It says, is it your intention to search my vehicle? You know, and both times they were already opening the doors and getting in. They said, yeah. I said, what's your probable cause? They didn't. They didn't have it. About 7 months ago, someone, a friend that was in a class that I taught about 26 or 28 years, well, actually it's 36, 37 years ago, he mentioned that he'd gotten stopped and he asked the officer what his probable cause was. And he says, I got your forking probable cause right here, you know. And he went through his vehicle, and in the trunk, he found an empty 30-round steel 223 magazine that fits an AR-15. And he says, you can't have this in California, and this and that. And he went on a fishing expedition. And he commented that when they got to trial, he had already filed a motion to suppress, He wrote it himself. And I didn't hear about this till it was after it was all done. Judge at this juncture instructed the jury to ignore the defendant's motion to suppress, which was highly illegal. And jury said that the next thing he did was that he filed a case against the officer for grand theft of his magazine, and because it was actually a curio that he had. It was a they used to be only 20, mostly 20 round mags back in the days when this one was made. So it was kind of a curio, and the when he refiled, he finally got the officer's body cam footage, and it got him asking, was his intent to search, and he doesn't have his permission, and he got the whole thing turned over on the body cam footage, where he had, right in front of both officers, had asked them, "Which are you intending to search? And I don't give you permission. What is your probable cause?" And he had no idea what they were looking for. Now, in the Supreme Court decision that Michael was talking about, Terry v. Ohio, 392 U.S. 1968, it makes it very, very clear that the officer is required, it says, they must have reasonable suspicion that would justify the stop, but they must have a specific and articulable facts that indicate the person who stopped is, or is about to be, was engaged in a crime or about to be engaged in criminal activity. They, because they quoted the Terry stop rule, and Jerry said, he asked them, what are you looking for? What's the crime? You know, and they boastfully, braggadociously, and callously and insensitively responded that, I got your probable cause right here, you know, in my hands, you know, and, he was the one did, officer, actually it was a deputy LA, county sheriff that did it. They were very, very, very unkind about it. But that exact question on the body cam footage is what got that stop completely overturned. And as I understand it right now, county of Los Angeles requested a continuance on the damages on a 42 U.S.C. 1983 case where jury filed after the other criminal case was dismissed against the two officers severally and jointly and the L.A. County Sheriff, and he's filed a $8.5 million compensatory damages and trouble damages suit against them. Now, me, I am honored that individuals would step up and wear a badge and wear a gun, and they go out there to serve and protect, you know, and I think that's absolutely wonderful. And I feel bad when we have to, shall we say, reprimand the ones that are doing the bad things. At this juncture, I feel very bad that, you know, that municipality is being sued, but I also feel very good about the fact that Jerry just sent them a message. By the way, Jerry is not his actual name. That's the name that I'm using for him. It's a very, very specific message, and he's getting sent it. Now, 2 weeks before Christmas, a gentleman up in around Alameda, California, was pulled over and stopped for a taillight And the officer stopped to ask him to get out of the vehicle. And he says, "No, I'm not going to get out of the vehicle. Why are you getting out, why you want me out of the vehicle? I'm quite happy right here." The officer says, "Well, I'm ordering you out of the vehicle." He says, "For what?" And I said, "Your intention to search." And the officer wouldn't explain to him. And he, you know, it was noted that he had a body cam. And just then, three more officers pulled up. And this is up in the northeast San Francisco Bay Area. I don't know if any of you know where Alameda is. But there's a big shipyard there. Well, one of the officers pointed out that there was a fully loaded 30-round Russian AK magazine sitting in the windshield on the right-hand side and demanded that the guy get out. And he says, "No, that's completely legal." "No, not in California, it's not." And there should have been something that tripped their trigger when the guy had DC plates on his vehicle. That should have caught somebody's attention, but it didn't. They didn't know that he was he had one of those little earpieces in, a very small one, and that some of his friends were all listening to the call, and four of them showed up, four cars full of friends, and the cops told him no, and they all but threw down on him, because you can't be here, this and that. No, we're here for him. And he says, "You may want to call your supervisor." Well, the deputy chief of police responded, and he came out and he says, "You're out of the car," this and that. And he says, and as he got out of the car, his jacket fell open and his U.S. Marshal's badge became very visible. And the other officers that were there all of a sudden found themselves facing the the business end of quite a few barrels. This only happened 3 weeks ago. I've tried to find this in the news. I can't find it. I can't find it anywhere. They detained the deputy chief of police and the officer that made the stop on the 30-round magazine. And apparently both of them are still being held. I cannot find anything follow up on it. But the gentleman, it turns out, we used to give out these business cards at the Republican senatorial conventions, and I used to give them out to just all over. But at a Republican senatorial convention in 2004, he got one of these little business cards. On one side it says, "Your Honor, where in the Constitution does it exclude my right to keep bear a firearm in that place, let alone your courtroom?" And the other side it says, 18 U.S.C. 242, Deprivation of Rights under Color of Law, second degree felony. And he had one of these tattered cards, and they hunted me down and followed me, followed and got my phone number to call me up and tell me about it. And I called the department up there, et cetera, et cetera. And they couldn't, they wouldn't tell me anything. In fact, the department, I asked about the deputy chief of police. They said, "No one works here by that name." That's what I was told. And, what happened was is that this federal marshal played his, all the way to, probable cause, would not let them search the vehicle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they were shocked to find out he was a federal marshal. Oh, those other friends that showed up, they happened to all be federal marshals as well. And they're in the process of, and apparently some nuisance guy called the federal marshal's office in D.C. and said, I want these two people released immediately. I'm going to give them a pardon." And he was told, "I'm sorry, these are federal charges. You have no jurisdiction. And if you have a problem with this, I can easily send somebody out to detain you as accessory." And he says, "You can't do it." I says, "This is federal, you're state." And he says, "Well, I can pardon." He says, "There's no state charges filed here to pardon. These are all federal." And apparently he pulled Periscope down quietly, apologized and hung up the phone. Apparently there were some situations where they were proceeding to stop people on the street with the they have these cameras in the cars now that look at all the their optical character recognition. They see all the license plates that were that have that are out there, and the ones that have a potential concern or a person of interest in it, the camera and the laptop flags the deputy or the officer driving the vehicle that, hey, that car two up and then one lane over to the right has a person of interest in it. And they were going after individuals that had a Class B misdemeanor or greater conviction and arresting them and taking their firearms from them. Well, apparently, and there's a handful of them says, what's your probable cause? And they wouldn't say. And at this juncture, a handful of those have been overturned and released because the individuals asked with the body cam there, what is your probable cause? What are you going after? These refused, every one of them that was on that little nuisance task force would not explain what they were looking for. You know, so what's happening is that when an individual, now the Terry stop is an extreme stretch of the Fourth Amendment. It's technically not constitutional. And the very basis and the decision that and you guys can look up that decision. It's Terry versus Ohio. You can get it. You can look it up on your internet there. It's Terry versus Ohio, 392 U.S. 1, 1968. And it was argued in December of 67 and decided on June 10th, 1968. But the what happens is, and by the way, when he said Supreme Court, that's the Supreme Court of Ohio. And that was Chief Justice Warren on that one that presided on that one. But what's happened is that cases where there was a very serious conspiracy to deprive an individual of their rights, because they ask, what is your probable cause? And it's documented, of all things, on the officer's body cam. These have been getting overturned pre-trial now. So what's happening is that, you know, if we help you sort out a case and, you get detained and all of a sudden you're getting fan mail from a bench and an invitation to the bench to discuss your behavior, okay, maybe we help get you through that. But that's like giving a man a fish. You fed a man for a day. But if I teach a person to fish, I fed a person for life. And that's men and women. So what's happening here is that it's very, very important that things that we've learned, some things extremely critical, just in the last year or two, about asking about what is your probable cause. Ask that question. Make sure that all the officers that are present hear you ask that question. Be very kind. Be very pleasant. He says, yeah, well, it looks like you guys want to search my vehicle, but I've got a little problem with that. What is your probable cause? What are you looking for? And they say, well, I'm legally allowed, to stop you. And ask them, are you talking about a Terry stop, a Terry versus Ohio? And that's what Terry refers to. And just ask them and say, you still have to have specific and articulable facts that indicate that I either just committed a crime or I'm about to commit a crime, and you know what you're looking for, so tell me what you're looking for. And some of the individuals that have articulated that have got the search stopped because the officers realize they're in the deep end of the pool. And two ladies, I was out in California last week, and two ladies pointed out that their vehicle was about to be searched, and they asked them what their probable cause was, and says, look, guys, that I don't think that's going to fly before a judge. And, you know, that's a criminal act. You know, that's a second degree felony. So what are you guys looking for? And all of a sudden, they put her purse, the driver's purse, back in the car. She says, "We apologize, ma'am. Have a nice day." And she asked him, "Weren't you going to write me a ticket for my taillight and for going 9 over the speed limit?" "You were, ma'am. We apologize. Have a nice day." They blew off the fix-it ticket and 9 miles over the limit ticket, okay, for her. And that only happened like 4 months. She apparently, what she explained, it was just at the end of the summer. So it was about 4 months ago it happened. The thing is that people take the term Terry, and you say people, John. Which people are we talking about? The pygmies in South Africa? No. There's only one person that's going to do a Terry stop, and that's the law enforcement officer, Leo. So we know exactly who we're talking about. It's the Leos. And they've stretched Terry over the years. And remember, some of these guys have been doing patrol for 10 or 20 or even I met somebody who's been on patrol for 41 years 3 years ago. I says, "You know, you could have been a watch commander, you know, a desk sergeant or something." He says, "No, I like patrol." He says, "I'm where I do good." He says, "I'm where I do the best." And he says, "I'm protecting and serving because we were stopped in a fatality accident, and he looked a little old to be on patrol." And I says, "Senior patrolman." He was 41 years and proud of it, you know, and he was, you know. But we talked about the Terry stop while we were I had just got done resuscitating one of the victims there that was laying on the ground, and we talked about Terry. And he, and strange enough, he was the one that bought it up. He says, "If I'd have seen this guy, I would have, you know, I would have investigated and searched the car and found the, you know, the open container before he got to it." I says, "So that would have been a Terry stop?" He goes, "You know what that is?" I says, "I might." And we chatted, and I listened. I says, "Well, tell me what you're thinking about." And he explained some things about Terry stop, and I says, "Is that completely legal or constitutional?" He says, "Well, Terry stop's..." I says, "That's not what, you know, the Justice Warren, that was not the opinion that was handed down." He goes, "Well, no, it is." And I says, "You got your little smartphone with you?" I says, "I think I see it in your holster in your back." He says, "Yeah." And we looked up a few things, and I just asked him to look up Terry stop. And how to justify a Terry stop is what I asked him to look up. And when he looked it up, and it said that they must have specific and articulable facts, you know, and he was shocked. He was totally, totally shocked. He believed that this random just jump in and go fishing thing, that we've got to 90 seconds to go fishing, kind of, and I don't know where he got the 90 seconds from, but that was, those were the words he used. So, and I didn't tell him that I had any background. I didn't tell him anything. Well, I didn't tell him I had a law degree or any of that. I let him believe I was just some happy-go-lucky dumb jamoke that stumbled through an accident and happened to know CPR, you know, knew a little first aid. And, I got a chance to, you know, resuscitate somebody there. That was kind of fun. It was nice to see, you know, see the officer was happy about it. The victim's wife was happy about it too. The thing is that, there's somebody that was stopped, yesterday at 3:47 in the morning. And, no zero probable cause. And, charged with gun violation, potential drug violations, you know, a bunch of, they stacked it up. So, on this one, what we're going to do is that the fact that the officers, plural, did not have probable cause. And if they had probable cause, they did not file an affidavit with an oath or affirmation, which is required to get a warrant, and they did not have a warrant, and they definitely didn't describe particularly the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So what we're going to do with them is that we're going to turn these. This gentleman could probably use a nickel or a dime or two, you know, a couple of shiny nickels or maybe even a shiny dime in his pocket, you know, a coin in there. You know, this one's probably worth at least $500,000 or $1.2 million, $1.3 million, not just in compensatory damages, but in trouble damages or punitive damages, actually. In this case, we're probably going to invite this officer, or actually both officers, both jointly and severally, and the department to their insurance carrier, their bond carrier, which I believe this particular department has a $1 million bond for each one of their employees. And if we go after both of them, we might even be able to get $2 million out of that without the department having to shell out any coin of its own, but all on its bond and its insurance. But that happened, oh, gosh, that was just 36 hours ago. And so that one, we're going to see how much income opportunity we can turn that into. If you get disparaged and your name is besmirched, they go out and do something like this with you, gosh golly gee willikers, we probably ought to go after them. At this juncture, having the evidence is extremely important, especially if they have a body cam. Getting that footage from the body cam is extremely important. This particular department that stopped that individual 36 hours ago, they do not wear body cams yet. It's probably going to happen shortly. On another stop, our continuing saga about Mr. T, and the saga as the stomach turns, the sick opera. I'm going over the body cam footage right now, and we're preparing 42 USC 1983 complaints against not just three of the four officers that were there, but also against the bench. And some people say, well, John, 42 USC specifically states that a bench on a discretionary matter. Yeah, that's true, a discretionary matter. But what happens if they commit a felony from the bench? Are they immune from that? You have to ask yourself, and some people say, well, the officers and that are enforcing the law, well, what about the legislators that passed the law? They say, well, they're immune to it. No, they're not. They're absolutely not. And people would like to say that even the president's immune and that cannot be arrested. Where does it say that the president can commit a felony and not be held responsible? Maybe I missed something. I never was very bright. I know I'm not the sharpest pencil in the box, but if somebody's going to commit a felony, damage, injure, or disparage somebody, or cost them their life or their liberty illegally, where does it say anybody, if anybody can find it, you know, I'll stand up and support this prosecutorial immunity or the judicial immunity or, you know, that everybody likes to talk about, you know, but it would be nice to see that if somebody knows, happens to know where it's at. In my minuscule understanding of jurisprudence and the law, I have yet And in my few short 60-some-odd years, I've yet to see where there's a law that allows people to do that. There are policies. And there are, and yes, there are Supreme Court opinions that support, like judicial or prosecutorial immunity, but they're just opinions. They're not law. And this is government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And the people don't have time, aren't able to, incapable of, don't feel safe, or just don't have the funds to do something themselves. They hire somebody. They hire help. And, you know, and that hired help, longshoremen, FAA air traffic controllers, ditch diggers, you know, forestry workers, governors, presidents, judges, and sheriffs. Oh, by the way, those last four, they're not just hired help, they're temp help. But the reason why that sheriff who's elected has the authority to make an arrest is because the people that hired him convey that authority to him for the 8 hours a day that he's, you know, walking the beat or, you know, sitting at that desk. But those inalienable rights and the right of citizens' arrest and all those other inalienable rights were never surrendered or abdicated to the hired help. The Ninth Amendment's very, very clear. And once again, the Ninth Amendment is one of the short ones again. But it says, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. This is in the Constitution. This is saying that there's rights that are retained by the people. Where did those rights come from? Previously, in the Articles of Confederation and the Declaration of Independence, it talks, the Declaration of Independence is very explicit about certain rights, and it talks about among those rights are, and it enumerates three. But it also makes it very clear that they're being governed exclusively, and the thing is very, 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 very critical is that it says, and to secure those rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government. And both consent and governed are capitalized in the Declaration of Independence. So that judge that's raining down fire and verbal threats and saying, look, I own you, I can do this to you, I can do... No, you can't, Your Honor. You're just hired help. We don't work for you. You report to us. And you're paid to clean up messes, fix things, solve problems. And that's your job. You're paid to adjudicate issues, not to terrorize the people that you're employed to. When the employees start terrorizing their employers, we've got a problem. And that's, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. You know, I've been wrong before, but if you have an employee terrorizing the employer, then it's time for the employees or employers to take some action. And, you know, the first and foremost and easiest thing to do is to file a complaint against that bench and take them down to the local courthouse. Some people say, well, John, they're not going to do anything, you know, about another. What's one judge going to do about another judge? Well, I was on a Zoom call, a Zoom hearing, 3.5, almost 4 years ago, for a hearing in the Pensacola U.S. District Court one of the individuals says, Your Honor, you know, the judge claims judicial immunity here, the judge in the referring case, the magistrate judge. And he says, absolutely, she has, I shouldn't use any more specific information about it. He says, but this person does have judicial immunity. And he says, do you mean to say that this person can take away my liberty, take away my rights, make wrong decisions, wash away everything that I have in my family, and that it's completely right. Is that what you're implying, or is that what you're saying? And the judge says, what do you mean? Well, because if that is what you're saying, then it's become simpler for most people that if they have no hope of justice, to just erase the judge before they get there. If they have no hope of justice, then the value of your life becomes nil. And this person said this in court, in session, on the record. The record was later sealed. I got followed up 3 times. They called me up to verify that, and they demanded that I sign something that I never signed it, that I understood that there was the equivalent of what's called a gag order on this hearing. But Your Honor, your life, if that's what you say, and you have somebody that's adversarial here, your life, the value just dwindled to zero, or is it my misperception? And there was a long silence. The roar of the silence was deafening. It was over a minute that not a word was said in that courtroom. That gentleman was standing there with his hands folded, you know, and just, and he finally says, Your Honor, I really would like an answer. He says, I see your point. He says, that judge will be removed, and that decision will be overturned. But it took over a minute of dead silence. And I don't know how many of you spent time in court, but 10 seconds is a long silence. This one was over a minute. And I was so shocked that this gentleman had the temerity of character to ask a question like that. But it got the judge's attention. And that justice no longer, that magistrate justice is no longer there. That individual was allowed to leave to pursue other issues. But coincidentally, that particular case was over a probable cause issue, and the judge tried to overrule it. Okay? So nowadays, with the technology getting the way it is, it's very important that you ask, or at least learn to ask those questions, so that what happens is that that becomes your de facto evidence. The right of the people to be, Amendment number 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons to be seized. I encourage everyone to look up tonight probable cause. Do a web search on it, and do a web search on Terry Stop and Terry versus Ohio. And if you look up Terry versus Ohio on the opinion, you'll realize that even though the law enforcement agencies use that as a backstop, drop everything, you know, I can go through this car and not have a search warrant, it's not. It's not the panacea, I didn't need to get a warrant moment for the Leos. Quite the opposite. If you read the full opinion from Justice Warren, you'll realize that. With that, my time has now come to a close. You probably figured out, based on the cussing and discussing that Michael and I had that when we first got started, that this is an unbelievably deep subject, and we should probably revisit. We've probably covered less than a quarter of what I have covered in when I've taught this in the past. There's a lot more to be had. We're going to open up for questions. If you're able to stay to the subject matter topic, that would be very pleasant and appreciated as we could continue to enrich the learning of our fellow person that is on this call. But if you're not, there is no requirement, no constraint to stay to the subject matter topic. You're free to ask questions on any topic that pleases you. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very much. Everybody here on the call knows the routine. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Those of you on Freedom's Radio, look to the center right of your monitor. You'll see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click inside of it. Type away your comment or your question. Underneath that rectangle, you'll find a place to put your name, some other requested information, and hit submit. When you hit submit, it pops up on my end what you wrote. And I'm glad to lend my voice to your comment or question, and then we can listen to John's response. Our first hand raised is from Bruce out of Texas. However, before I call on him, I do have my own question, so I'm going to cut in line because I can. John.
Oh, boy.
You heard when I was doing the reading the various published information regarding a Terry stop and so forth, that I kept hammering the word, stuttering on the word crime, a criminal act, crime this, crime that. Can you tell us, is everything that we do wrong a crime under the Fourth Amendment, or is there something else?
That's a very good question, Michael. In fact, I'm very glad you asked that, you know, being the little insurrectionist. I mean the seeker of truth that you are.
Troublemaker, I am.
Yay, sick 'em doggy. You go, brother. You rock. And to answer that question, it says that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by an oath or affirmation particularly describing the place to be searched or persons or things to be seized. If a person has committed a criminal act, then they've got everything, they know they've got everything to get a warrant. That is their probable cause. So they should be completely pleased and just joy-driven happy to get that judge up, wake that judge up at 3:30 in the morning, and get their warrant so that they can punctuate their hard work and their efforts at serving the people with doing it right so that they know there will be no question. If somebody is a criminal or they've committed a crime, let me reiterate, a lot of these law enforcement officers, the Leos, you know, they're like baseball players in some ways. You know, they live their life on the in the batting cage, just waiting to, you know, just get that right swing and that opportunity to impress and please everybody in the stands and run the bases and have the roar of the laughter and the smell of the grease paint and the crowd just go ballistic when they touch down from 40,000 feet bound on that last step to get home plate. You know, they're just dying for that one moment, you know, where everybody is, all eyes are on them, and they're excited about that they did something correct. The officers, stack, racking, and packing, and with a Band-Aid or a bow on it and a ribbon, and a do not open till Christmas sign with a package that, look, I have a good conviction, a good case here. If there is a criminal act, they know they've got that person dead to rights. They, ma'am, could you please stand there, lean against the car, or sir, or put your hands on the hood? Can you please just stay right there for the moment? And until they get that search warrant so that they can punctuate the night's efforts or their week's efforts, or maybe they've been after this person, this guy or this girl for a year, and they know they're a criminal, and they've seen them do criminal acts, but they never had the evidence, and now they know it's in the trunk. you know, do you think in this green earth that they, any person in their right mind would want to throw that away by committing an illegal search or even stripping it down to a Terry stop? No Leo in his right mind would want to dare risk that. And I've used this exact argument on a Zoom call, appearing amicus curiae for someone, that I used literally this exact argument. And I was, you know, and I says, and I, Your Honor, why would this law enforcement officer, that one, risk just stepping over the line for a perfectly good stop and an arrest where they could be rewarded and identified by their overseers or by the chief of police in this particular one, that they had done a good job and received that feedback, unless there was something wrong with the stop and they knew they didn't have what it takes. So criminal, if they really are criminal, then they know they've got them dead to rights, and they know they've got the information and the evidence waiting. And I listened to a girl share what she had on her smartphone. She was recording the whole stop. And she asked the officer, she says, "You don't really know what you're looking for, do you?" And he says, "Why do you say that?" She says, "Because if you did, you would have gone straight for it, and you would have gone immediately. You would have asked me to just wait while you called in and got a warrant, because you knew that, you know, to punctuate your day's activities or this stop and do it right, that if I really was, you know, if you really had me, that you knew you had me. But see, you're not. You're going fishing. And what happens when I go to court and I file a motion to suppress because you didn't have probable cause? And then what happens when I go into U.S. District Court and file a 42 U.S.C. 1983 complaint against you, and I try to take your boat and your house or whatever you have away from you? Or maybe I just go to the prosecutor's office, the deputy attorney general's office, and I file a 18 U.S.C. 242 deprivation of rights under color of law or policy, and you go to jail on a second-degree felony. Or because you have a gun and you're threatened, that's a threatened use of force, I can ask for the death penalty." And this deputy sheriff, Orange County deputy sheriff from Southern California, says, "Who the shaving cream are you, lady?" And he says, "I just, I just wanted to know." He goes, "Get out of my sight." And he told her to leave before he arrested her. He didn't have probable cause to arrest. But criminal, does that kind of put things in perspective?
Well, the thing that I'm asking is, I'm traveling down the road, I'm behind the wheel, and I'm smoking a cigarette, the ashes fall on my lap, I sit there and I start to look down to brush them off, and I've weaved over on a double yellow line, and I bring myself right back in. No harm, no foul to anybody. The road was clear, but now I have a red light coming in my rearview mirror and a blue light special. I'm pulled over. Have I committed a crime at this point?
No.
Yes or no? Or have I committed an infraction? Is there a difference between a crime and an infraction? Is an infraction probable cause?
Technically, when you color outside the lines, under the statute law, even though there has been no injury, as in common law, there is no injury. There's no crime. If there's no injury, there's no crime. But in statute law, they criminalize individuals for activities whether there's an injury or not. You could be cited for failure to control your vehicle, and then because it was an oncoming lane, you could be cited for felony failure to control your vehicle. And and with that, they could imply that you're intoxicated, where they ask you to get out of the car, and they could do a sobriety check. But do they have probable cause to search your vehicle?
No.
If they take you out in a sobriety check and there's no smell of alcohol, and most recreational pharmaceuticals are not alcohol, there's no smell, and there's no easy way to detect it. They do not have probable cause to search you. They would, if they say he's acting erratically, he did not pass a sobriety test, we'd like to search the vehicle, then he can get, you know, they can go to, they can log on to the watch commander, file their affidavit, and get the warrant, and then search your vehicle.
All right, thank you. All right, Bruce, front and center, sir.
Hey.
Bruce from Texas.
Oh, yep. How's everybody doing tonight?
Hey, better than mortal human beings should be mortally allowed to be a minor, brother. How about yourself?
I love to hear that. That's awesome. Doing great. So in Perryverse, Ohio, I'm doing the research as you were talking about it, and it appears to say that a Terry stop is okay if and only if, and I just want to make sure I'm getting this right, the Leo can articulate what he's searching for and why. Am I reading that correctly?
Bruce, bingo. It allows for a brief and temporary involuntary detention of an individual to do a Terry frisk or a, you know, but they have to have reasonable suspicion that would justify asking the person on the sidewalk, look, stand over here, if you're that person walking down the sidewalk or driving the car and they pull you over, you know, you get, as Michael shared, the blue light special, ask them, what are you looking for? I says, do you have probable cause? Do you feel you have probable cause or reasonable suspicion? And what are you looking for? And you just tell them, hey, if you can tell me what you're looking for and I got it, I'll tell you. You know, but just do whatever you can to coax them into, especially if they've got a body cam, to explain
right.
what they're looking for.
So that
yes.
you're helping them not break the law.
Yep.
Correct.
I may be one of those delusional, miserable, insufferable.
No. It's I
people
agree
that
with you
believe
that I don't want
believe
their,
that there's still some
job.
Good out
I'm,
there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I very much don't want these guys to go to jail for something for being an egotistical asshole one night. You know, I'm very happy to do whatever the officer asked. However,
right.
I want to, in a polite way, direct him into not breaking the law because he's probably got a family, too, and would like to go
right,
home to
right,
them
right.
instead of spend the night in his own jail.
Yeah, right.
So I think I'm clear now on as long as he has a can articulate what it is he's looking for. And if they can't, then they're fishing. And I do not consent to this search.
Yeah, exactly.
I do not waive my Fourth Amendment right. So
very
okay.
Very very good. Yes, Bruce.
I got
exactly.
it. Thank you.
Hey, you getting any of this rain, or what part of Texas are you in tonight?
I'm in Dallas, and we got a lot of rain, not a lot, but it's been raining off and on all most of the afternoon, and it just poured when the call started, and it sounds like it's abated a little bit, but we're fortunately getting pretty wet. Our lakes are not full from the drought from last year, but they're starting to recover.
Wonderful. Hey, Bruce. Happy New Year, brother.
Hey, you too, guys.
Thank you. Back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
All righty. Thank you. So next is Brother Michael from Las Vegas.
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
No, I
can hear you real good, Michael. I can hear you, Michael.
I have articulable suspicion that there's a crime being committed.
But oh, boy.
There was a lawyer, and I can't remember his name. I don't have it in front of me.
A warranty insurance, which is a ripoff since I get work at half off anyway.
Right, so that's correct.
Correct.
Now, Michael, were you going to mute out, Michael?
Oh.
Michael Edwards, were you going
to
mute
no,
out?
No, that was Bruce. I forgot to mute up Bruce. He...
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay, good.
We're
okay.
Good?
Keep going, Michael from Las Vegas.
Anyway, there was a lawyer, and I don't have his name in front of me. When you get up before you go out the door, and he wrote a book on it, and the bar tried to stop him, you commit 3 felonies a day. And that's interesting because people can't believe it. They've written so many codes, and they've criminalized all of them because of the money. It has nothing to do with anything but money. Follow the money every time. But maybe we can help.
By the way, are you spelling that L-A-W-Y-E-R or L-I-A-R?
Well, it's either way you spell it, they're committing a fraud because there should be a counselor of your choice when you go to court, not a British associated registered agent of the king.
Jennifer Sue from New York just filed a thing, and she's getting ready to file another one. And there's a gentleman, Mr. T, just filed one. Your Honor, where does it talk about having to be a member of the bar to appear with me in court? The Louisiana bar wasn't even contrived and didn't even come into existence till 1917. And the American Bar Association wasn't even contrived and founded into existence till 87 years after the Sixth Amendment was not just penned but ratified. And it says the assistance of counsel. It doesn't. And Your Honor, I do not want representation. I don't want somebody talking for me that has a power of attorney to say something that I don't want. I want somebody to assist me in being able to respond to the court's questions and answer. Therefore, we're working on preparing a brief that hopefully when it's done, we'll be able to maybe even hand it out. That what it'll do, Michael, is make it absolutely clear that there is no such thing as representation identified in the Constitution. It is only and strictly and explicitly somebody to assist. That's it. And your statement about assistance is exactly correct. You are spot on.
My daughter's got a judge in Tampa that, because she argued with him about his jurisdiction and his authority in the court and his flag, because he has a military flag, and he lost it. But that wasn't the best part. The best part was after he found her in contempt of court, she had another case before him that she had already paid the $25, and he found that she didn't appear. Well, only spirits can appear. So, but she was locked up, and he knew where she was. And consequently, he fined her another $250. Anyway, she's gone after gone to the state Supreme Court, the judicial, to everybody that she could go to, and they've just all gone around in circles, but it's not over with yet. The fat lady hasn't sung yet, so.
I'm honored and glad to hear you share that story.
She's got a couple of doozies. It's slumlords that she's and she had one in Tampa that he perjured himself, and the judge went along with it. So we're fixing to, as soon as she can get internet up here, because we're very sparse on internet up here in North Florida. But as
where are you located, yeah. Michael? I thought you were in Las Vegas.
No, I moved to North Florida, Madison County.
Oh, okay. Okay, so my little comment about the U.S. District Court in Pensacola was not far away from you.
No, 2.5 to 3 hours.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know a little bit about judges and lawyers and how the system works from years ago. But anyway, we'll see how things progress this coming year if we don't have a nuclear war.
I used to tell people I'm gonna take a nap. Don't wake me up unless there's a GNT, global thermonuclear war, or a global pandemic. But I can't say that anymore because we've had it just recently, a global pandemic, and we're on the verge of nuclear war right now.
Oh, absolutely. They got to cover their tracks somehow. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's I try to get the number out and get people to call or to at least listen, and it's hard to do, but I think I have found some fertile ground up here, and by golly, I'm gonna put together something here that I can go around to the sheriff's office and to the businesses and the schools and maybe be a benefit and open their eyes to the law, to education.
Well, you know that old saying, one life at a time?
Yeah.
We're restoring liberty to America one person at a time, one life at a time. And Michael, if we can help each other out one individual at a time, and get it right and be an asset and a blessing to our fellow person, one individual at a time, then we may accidentally be doing something right.
Yes, that's a good possibility. You help one person and they tell 10 people, it doesn't take long to communicate. But when you get grass fire communication up and running, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
I've got a lot of union employees, different crafts that I know a lot of people in. So maybe I can get the word out to them like that.
Right. Each of us does our part, however small or however great it is. The chain that's going to span this chasm, Michael, is very, very long and has many links. And if the chain that currently spans it, if it was just one link short, we wouldn't be making it. So every link is important. Everyone, none of us is greater than the other. The only thing that makes us great is that we work together with each other.
That's right. And I want to thank you because you're a blessing for all of us.
Well, your words are very kind. I'll try to live up to the kind accolades that you've honored me with.
I just wish I would have studied law more when I got Black's Law in 1967, but I had unfortunate things that happened that I had to continue working and I wasn't able to continue my studies at that time.
Well, I started at law after I got out of the Air Force in 1976. And I started there in Southern California, and the formal law. Before that, I had studied quite a bit, and I knew most of the judges in my town, and they knew me, and a lot of them had given me a lot of pointers, and some of them given me a lot of raspberries. one of them, Judge Emerson, I was his paper boy for 8 years before I did time in his jail. And he says, well, I'm going to find, he says, young man, and I'm his paper boy, and he knows who I am. He knows my first name, and I'm there every month collecting for that newspaper, you know, and I always porch the newspaper for him, you know. Ever since I was 7 and a half, I porched that newspaper for him, you know, and he says, young man, he says, I'm sorry, but, you know, he says, I'm going to have to fine you $5 for that. And he knew that I made $5.41 a month throwing 178 newspapers in the morning. And I was, a wealthy man. Hey, I was the BMOC, big man on campus, $5.41. I was wealthy. You know, I says, Your Honor, and I called him Your Honor. I didn't call him Leon, you know, and when we were face to face, he let me call him by his first name, Leon, you know, but I says, Your Honor, I don't actually have any real money, you know, because it says only gold and silver. He says, well, let me tell you this. If you have some that paper money that, you know, those ferns, as you call them, you know, I says, I'll take some of that. But I says, Your Honor, wouldn't it be correct to, you know, if we had some real money to pay the fine with real dollars? He says, I tell you what, I'll let you sit in my jail till you find some real money. Remanded. And he let me sit there, you know, and after that night after court was over, it was like 5:30, and I saw him at 10 in the morning, you know.
Wow.
You know, and I took time off of school to go to court that day. I rode my 10 speed over the courthouse to be there for, you know, and Judge Emerson, he come in, you know, he had the bailiff unlock the door, and he come in and sit down next to me, and he says, well, did you learn anything today? I says, yeah, I had the meaning of remanded. And he started laughing. He says, no, I just want you to, he says, I want you to learn something. He says, there's some battles you can fight and there's some you can't. And even though sometimes it's dead wrong, he says, you may or may not be able, you may not or may not have a good solution there, but I wanted you to learn that today, that above anything else, that you might have picked the wrong battle to fight, you know, because he says, I hear you. He says, I agree with you. We're not using legal, lawful money and currency. And he says, as it goes, he says, I wish someday I could figure out how to fight that fight myself. But he says, I wanted you to learn today that, he says, because you may find yourself fighting other battles. But he says, you're right. Technically, I shouldn't accept those Federal Reserve notes, because those are debt instruments. And he went on to explain to me a whole bunch of stuff that a lot of it I'd already heard, but he explained, he says, a note is a debt instrument, you know, and a dollar bill, a bill is still a bill, you know, and he says, look, and I can get into this, and I can cover, I can talk about stuff that would, he says, I could make you sick for the next 6 hours or 8 or 2 weeks telling you about all the stuff I could tell you. But he says, I want you to learn something, that it's better to sometimes, even though something may be wrong, to learn to fight the fight that you can fight and not the one, you know, and fight the ones you should, not the ones you think you can or think need to be. He says, only fight the ones that you have the ability and are prepared to fight.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I learned a I learned a hard and good lesson in Judge Emerson's court that day. And that's probably a good lesson for all of us. There's a lot of wrong that's going on out there, and there's some times where we don't have the wherewithal to do battle against that particular aspect of wrong or evil, and it may not be either wise or skillful to go choose off something, you know. And we've got some beloved, precious people on this call that, that I kid you not, Michael, are just they're amazing, and the wrong and the evil is going on makes their blood boil like it makes my blood boil, and some of them do have the wherewithal to at least take a nip at some and do some damage on some of those issues. Some of us don't. And I think we need to remember that choosing the battles that we know we can fight and win is more important than going out there and doing battle and waging a war that can't be won.
Yeah.
Thank you for your input. Is there anything else that we can do to be an asset or a blessing for you tonight, Michael?
Well, I just wanted to bring that up about that lawyer that says we commit three felonies a day, every day. It's amazing. And, you know, they fought him, and he won. They couldn't stop him from printing the book. But that's what we're up against. They want to keep everything in their pocket.
That's what statute law does. It criminalizes the innocent. That's what statute law does.
There's nowhere that they have no library for statute law. It's either common law or advocacy law. There is no library for statutory law. I'm sorry.
Well,
they've made
yeah.
it up. They use it, but it's all fake.
Yeah, don't ask me what I'm doing. I'm making this up as I go.
Yeah, that's...
Okay. Thanks for your time, Michael. The Father's blessings be upon you, brother. You take care.
Thank you.
And back to you, Michael Edwards and Martin.
All righty. Miss Jennifer.
Our
last caller tonight.
Okay. I didn't know if I was last or not.
Oh,
Michael
and I have been using your name in vain all day today and yesterday, so.
Ooh, famous. well, due to the fact that I have been sick for a week, and before that I spent a wonderful week with all four of my children at the same time, I have just, like, completely forgotten what to do with Leo. So I just want to see if what I'm saying is what I have to do. So before we go to the court, I think, on January, before we go to the court and ask whether he still has to come in on January 17th, should he put in an affidavit saying what happened at the last court date with the judge and them kicking me out, and then also that the DMV gave him his car and license and keys and everything, plates back, so it's kind of over. Should he file that information first?
Okay, did Leo call up and see if everything had been already dismissed?
He told me he would rather go to the court and tell them he was innocent. I said, they're not going to let you say a word. That's not going to happen.
There's sometimes when, just a moment ago, Michael and I were talking about sometimes there's battles that you can fight that you know you can and you know you can win. And then there's times where it's wise not to choose off a battle. This is one of those battles that's wise not to choose off. Leo, if they've already dismissed his case and he's already been adjudicated innocent, going there and saying, look, I'm innocent, and standing out, taking his soapbox with him and standing out in the courtroom, is only going to get him into trouble. If Leo has a tack on his chair and an axe to grind, we need to find a woodshed that has a lot of wood and a very sharp axe. And depending on how bad his tack is and how big it is, then we go dull the axe so that it takes a lot longer to get the wood chops so that he gets all that energy taken off. We don't want him in court choosing
off.
That's
what I said.
You understand the condition and the position there.
I do. But
okay. There's another aspect to this, Jennifer, and what you need to do. Many years ago, I was working part time as an EMT paramedic for a volunteer fire department in Southern California back in the 70s. This is after I got out of the Air Force. And there was a very, very bad accident. I thought I was the youngest person working as an EMT with that department. There was one younger. He was on days. I was graveyard. Graveyard and swing were volunteer. Days were paid. But this guy came out, and I had this guy breathing, and he was badly bunged up. A lady T-boned his little mini pickup. The driver's door was crushed in. I had to break out all the glass to get him out of it. And I finally got him breathing, got a sinus rhythm. And this kid walks up, and he goes, holy shaving cream, Batman, paraphrased. That guy's so screwed up, he'll never make it. You know, and this guy gripped my hand tighter than I've ever felt. Somebody gripped my hand, and I was looking at his eyes, and they rolled back in his head, and I lost him. And what happened was that, and I went over and talked to the highway patrolman there. I said, look, this guy, I had this guy alive, and I just lost him. There's a lady over there still in her car, the one that hit this guy, the one that ran the red light. She's in that fence, car entangled in the fence there. Can you send him? And the sheriff was saying, look, this guy's saying that you're interfering with his job. He says, I'm graveyard, he stays. You know, and I says, can you go just have him help this other lady that's over in the other car there? Get him. So what happened was, Jennifer, we gave him a job to do. We gave this guy something to get him away from. And I end up getting the guy back again. And when the ambulance, they didn't have 911 back then, but when the ambulance took this guy away, he was breathing, he had one eye open, and he was looking. Okay? What you need to do with Leo, how does this apply to Leo? Let's give him something to do. Let's start working on a 42 U.S.C. 1983 complaint against the judge for the judge's deprivation of Leo's right to have his own counsel, in this case, his own choice of counsel, which was you, and depriving him of that. And let's go after the judge. And some people say, John, you can't go after judges. Well, we talked earlier on the call about where does it say that somebody, just because they've been elected to office or they're hired to this office or appointed to that office, that they now can commit felonies, do harm to individuals, and not be held accountable? I'm sorry. At this juncture, if we have to, let's have him provide an affidavit, a complaint with probable cause to get a grand jury hearing for a deprivation of rights, a second-degree felony under 18 U.S.C. 242, because he was deprived his right of counsel at that hearing. Okay. Let's give Leo something that he can do that's constructive and give him some positive direction. And that might even be an income opportunity for him. You.
Hmm.
Okay.
So should we
talk,
do that?
Talk to Leo. Talk to Leo. First talk to Leo and explain to him, you know, that, you know, going in there, let's first find out if it's been dismissed and everything's gone away.
So I don't need to file anything before we find out whether it's gone away or not.
He can call up tomorrow morning and find out if it's gone away.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering whether we should file anything before we...
Not before tomorrow morning?
Yeah. Well, obviously...
You mean like tonight?
No. Well, no, I'm just saying, like, you should go tomorrow. So we don't need to...
Call up in the morning, find out if it's been dismissed, and say, Leo, look, if it's been dismissed, then let's, you know, you were deprived your right. And I'm sure you remember that statute, 42 U.S.C. 1983. You know, if you don't remember it, then just quick write it down. But 42 U.S.C. 1983.
Okay. Yep. I've got 18 U.S.C. 42 and 42 U.S.C. 1983.
Yeah, 42 U.S.C. 1983 is the civil statute. That's one where you turn it into an income opportunity, and that's one of the ones that, remember, you and I are working on for you right now.
Right.
And when we get yours done, then what we'll do is we'll see the judge. He kind of had a change of heart there, and so we don't know whether we're going to file that one yet because he's, he sent a link for a notice of appearance for me. We may have already got that taken care of, for you. But what we'll do is we'll still go through the gymnastics of putting one together, so that you can help Leo.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So, should the affidavit complaining about the judge, is that the 18 U.S.C. 242?
Well, he's going to need that affidavit for both of them.
Okay. And we've written to, or today he... I gave him the papers to send to the DMV asking for when the first time the insurance company actually notified the DMV that he had paid the insurance. So
once
we get that, we'll have complete proof that they didn't do their
exactly.
job.
Exactly. Because in this case, the insurance company is the one. In New York State, the insurance companies are required to file a certificate of coverage with the state, and if they don't file that, you know, that's when they come after the individual, and that's what happened to Leo. So it was obviously the insurance company is the one that broke the rules and is culpable and prosecutable in this one. Okay, so at this juncture, Leo, you may want to just work with Leo to file a suit directly against the insurance company for the damages. And on this one, there would be compensatory damages and punitive damages.
Right.
You could get treble damages out of that, but they're let's first get Leo out of the crosshairs, you know, out of the line of fire, and then let's go after the income opportunity. Okay?
What if the court says that he still has to come in on January 17th? What will we do then?
They will have a good reason, theoretically. They'll have a reason why he's got to come in. Because they're going to give him his dismissal papers, or they just want to see actual physical copies of the paperwork that he's got. There'll be a reason. And he'll be able to ask, can I come in sooner and just bring that in? You know, right. Some of those he may be able to just ask that. Does that make sense, okay. Jennifer?
Yeah. Okay. Now, the affidavit about against the judge is really just writing what his experience was while in front of the judge.
On this date, I, Leo, so-and-so, being of sound mind and body over the age of 18, not otherwise disqualified from stating the following, do so state and swear and apply to that on this date, I requested my Sixth Amendment counsel be this person, Lady XYZ, and the judge refused to allow me my constitutional right to my representation, and quite the opposite, had her physically removed from the courtroom in violation of my Sixth Amendment rights to counsel. Do not use the word representation. Nowhere in the Constitution and nowhere in the Sixth Amendment to say representation is a word contrived by the American Bar Association so that they can take an individual and get the power of attorney so that that individual, originally it was the aristocracy that when they couldn't take the time, they didn't want to go from this city to that city to appear, they figured out a way and they worked it out under old British law to be represented in court, and that person had the authority to, and the Crown had to believe that they had the strength and the authority to represent this individual, and so there was very specific definition contrived and put in place regarding the word representation, and so anytime you talk about representing, they're immediately you're talking attorney speak, assistance of counsel. Guidance, that's what the Constitution gives you. That's the one that there is a felony to deprive the individual of that right.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, well, that's when they send you to the back of the court, and then the next thing, an attorney goes and stands next to him, and I heard the attorney, and the judge said to him, we're appointing an attorney to represent you. And that's when I stood up and said, he's not giving up his rights and allowing an attorney to represent him. And that's when they kicked me right out of the court.
Right.
Anyway, thanks. I kind of know what to do now, so I won't take up. Oh, I'll just ask about
Chase. You and I may be following up midday tomorrow on Chase.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Take care, girl. And happy New Year, Jennifer.
So remember this.
Martin and Michael.
Yeah, remember this, that not only was Leo injured, Jennifer was injured.
Right.
Jennifer was injured because she was not allowed to assist.
Exactly.
Now, if Jennifer was being paid, then yes, she's damaged.
Has to have a monetary?
I choose to avoid that right now, only because it's too easy to get that entangled in representation. To fight only one issue at a time, go one step at a time, how do you eat the elephant? One bite at a time. And the one bite on this one is assistance of counsel.
Right.
That's the one bite that we want to chew on very carefully.
Sounds good. Thank you.
The Bible blessings be upon
you,
girl. Back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
Thank you so very much, everyone. I want to thank you for joining us this evening. Tune in tomorrow. I will be sharing with you Mr. Slevin's limited liability company, and the benefits of it for people who are presently employees to rearrange yourself as a worker. Believe it or not, those are important words in law. And also, if you're an entrepreneur, how to rearrange your business in such a way as to make it become something that does not have a tax liability. So until then, and John, do you have any closing comments to make?
Once again, for all of you, it's an honor and privilege to stand beside each one of you and help our fellow Americans restore liberty to America. Thank you.
Thank you. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm.